My next question to you was going to have been something along the lines, earlier I said you and I and all the other men on this planet have made that journey to manhood, but you've actually touched on it now to say that in a sense we never really come to a final state of manhood. It's a bit elusive throughout life, maybe.
It's very definitely elusive. And it's made very much more difficult by there not being effective rites of passage or initiation for boys anymore. We've become so clever that we don't think that the age-old wisdom and patterns that have been used in indigenous societies across the world really have relevance. We're too sophisticated for that. But, of course, we're paying the price. I mean, just look at our juvenile crime statistics. We're paying the price for that. And if you happen to have a son that's run off the rails, that's been in trouble with the law. I mean, you're paying the price for that, that we have neglected these basic principles of there needing to be rites of passage, of there needing to be initiation. But it's really important to recognise that that still doesn't make manhood any less precarious. It just means that we are more likely to produce mature males that can contribute to society, albeit they'll still be disposable, because the masculine gender is a disposable gender. It won't make manhood any less precarious, but it will mean that we have better contributing male individuals within our community, within our society, if those sort of processes of assistance are given. But what we do now, which is really interesting, is we put such an emphasis in our culture on childhood development, the importance of protecting children. In fact, we overprotect them. There's no question about that. You know, the phenomenon of snowplow parenting is alive and well. You protect them against any unpleasant experience. So there's all this emphasis on childhood development. But when boys get to that age where physiologically they are rapidly developing those capacities that can be quite destructive to the community, and yet which need to be shaped and channeled in a way that is productive to community, we neglect to assist them with rites of passage and initiation. And instead, we leave them in many ways to have to try and initiate themselves. They drive cars fast and in ways that, certainly in rural communities, we've seen many deaths as a result of that, and the use of alcohol. You know, it's in a strange and warped way. Getting drunk to the extent of experiencing alcoholic poisoning is now a form of initiation. Does that produce maturity? I really don't think so. So we neglect to do this. So they struggle terribly, try and initiate themselves. And I think for the majority, they never arrive at mature masculinity or manhood. They get stuck in boy psychology rather than attaining to man psychology. And that's a tragedy. And of course, then we blame them for that and we jail them for that. It's a problem.
Maybe that's just one of those key times where older men should come in as mentors and be there as models and supporters and so on. Maybe we don't do that enough.
No, we don't. And it's something we are trying to, well, as an organisation, and our interest is in men and boys, we are trying desperately to address. We do need to be there to catch them. We need to be there to welcome them. We need to provide mentoring to young males. And I can tell you one of the things that I learnt with one of my own sons was that there comes a point where one's parenting is no longer welcome and no longer effective. And certainly this is true for males. And I found that I needed to speak to a friend of mine. I didn't have a relative that I could ask, so I asked a friend of mine who was a little older than me whether he'd be prepared to mentor my son, and he said yes, he would. So he approached my son and befriended him, and he was able to continue on a process of assisting my son to mature into a more responsible person beyond anything I could have done. And this, of course, was and is consistent with, again, what has occurred in Indigenous communities, mm-hmm. where young males have been removed from their mothers and launched into the world of men and assisted not by their fathers but by other male elders through rites of passage and a process of initiation.
this seems to me to bring us back to a quote of where we started, a need to discover an affirmative perspective about gender, masculinity and manhood, not the alleged male compared with female ineptitude. There are so many stereotypes around about men, and they militate against a healthy society.
Yes, they do. And it's very interesting that the idea has been propagated that men are less competent emotionally and psychologically than women. Well, actually, that's abject nonsense when one looks at the data, the data that pertains to coping. And if we just look at mental illness statistics, if it were true that men were less capable and competent emotionally, psychologically than women, we would surely expect that there would be a higher rate of mental illness amongst males. Well, in fact, that is not the case. And when we look at general prevalence statistics, mental illness prevalence statistics, we discover that, in fact, men and women in general experience much the same degree of mental illness. But going back to the idea of biology being the great differentiator of gender and indeed of human behaviour, we see there is a clear differentiation in the kind of mental disorders that men and women experience. Women, for example, experience twice as much depression as men, but four times the number of men commit suicide. Men tend to misuse alcohol or use alcohol for the purposes of self-medication more than women, and indeed it's alcohol that tends to add to the lethality of suicidal action in men. We know that in general, more women experience anxiety disorders than men. More men exhibit antisocial personality disorders than do women. So again, biology begins to shed some light on the quite different experience that men and women have, even in the realm of coping and mental health and departures from mental health. So it's never been true to say that men are less competent than women psychologically or emotionally or in coping. And in fact, in some ways, in coping, men cope more adaptively than women do in highly stressful or difficult circumstances. But overall, men and women cope in ways that are consistent with their gender, consistent with their particular biology. And these things have, like it or not, served us very well over many, many centuries. And we have proliferated and survived and are the dominant species on the planet as a result. So we're getting something right. Now, that may not sit well within the sensibilities of, a comfortable middle-class view of the world. The sort of nuanced expectations that have entered into, relationships in our sort of comfortable society. But at the end of the day, they have underpinned our survival, and they have meant that as a species, we've succeeded brilliantly well.
In 5 or 10 years' time, what would you hope would have been achieved to answer some of the questions that you're raising in this paper?
What I would hope is that we can treat men and women with respect, men and women with respect, and understanding that men and women have different reproductive agendas, understanding that men and women's different behaviours, sex-specific behaviours, determined by their biology, which we call gender, are respected for the contribution they make to our capacity to have a high quality of life, to be able to produce the means we need by which to live a reasonably comfortable life, by which we can maintain a high standard of health and increase our longevity. I'd like to see men and women respected for who they truly are in terms of biology and in terms of their contribution to society. It does not benefit women that we demonise men. It does not benefit men that we in any way treat women poorly, as might have occurred in the past. I'd also like to see us recognise and put into perspective that a minority of men behave badly, and as do a minority of women. But we should not generalise those minorities to the majority in the way that we have in creating stereotypes about men or women. We should see men and women as very much as they have, in complementary way, a mutually complementary way, and of equal value, but functioning in their own particular ways, in their own particular domains, in their own particular cultural spaces.
Dr. John Ashfield, it's been a pleasure to talk to you today. Thanks for coming into the studio.
My pleasure.
I've been speaking with South Australian author, educator and psychotherapist Dr. John Ashfield about his article Gender, Masculinity and Manhood. Dr. Ashfield is a founding director of the Australian Institute of Male Health and Studies. The full article is published in New Male Studies, Volume 1, Issue 1, January 2012. It's available online, www.newmalestudies.com. That's newmalestudies.com. In Adelaide, South Australia, I'm Tony Ryan.